The Exponential Finance Podcast welcomes Bruno Diniz back to explore the evolution of financial technology in Brazil, highlighting the success of Pix in transforming the financial landscape and the upcoming launch of a central bank digital currency named Drex. We also discuss open finance, tokenizing the economy, and the global impact of Brazil's fintech innovations. So let us dive right in.
Excellent. Good evening from Tokyo. Hey, Bruno, how are you doing?
Good, and good morning from Brazil.
We are on exactly opposite ends today. So it's 9 p.m. Tokyo, 9 a.m. Sao Paulo, right?
Exactly.
And so you see the long sleeve shirt here in Tokyo, and you're clearly in summer. So everything is upside down. It has been almost exactly 2 years. I was checking when we did the podcast last time in February. 2 years is a long time in fintech. So really appreciate you taking the time once more to talk to us about what's going on in Brazil, South America overall, right? And you're the leading expert fintech analyst, multiple book author, frequent conference speaker. Thank you very much for being here.
It's my pleasure, my friend.
So where do you want to start? CBDCs, maybe?
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, and we live like a type of dog years, right? But the cool thing, especially when you're talking about Brazil and about Latin America, is the change here. First of all, I think the last time we spoke, we talked about Pix. Pix was released in 2020, and it's a transformational infrastructure. So we see a lot of public infrastructures for finance, for money transferring. That happened in India as well and was transformational. From that, we had the creation of the open finance framework in Brazil. When we look at where we are right now after the implementation, which turned 3 years, like last week here in Brazil, we have 3 years of open finance. It's been constructed through phases. We are in the final phase of implementation. It's already one of the most used open finance infrastructure in the world. I think we've been achieving a lot of good stuff. There is an agenda of the central bank that's been very well executed in the past few years. And now we got the latest piece of this puzzle, which is the CBDC in Brazil, which is going to be called Drex. D-R-E-X. It's acronym for digital real, and the E-X, like an exchange. Not yet translated, but that's the title, is the age of the programmability into the system. It's something that we already have in the crypto world, but now we're going to have that embedded in native into the financial system. So it's self-settlement, smart contracts, all of that being allocated into the system, mandated by the regulator. I know other countries are doing something around CBDCs. The BIS is already pushing for CBDCs, just released a report around that and how other countries can make this move. And for sure, that's going to be another, we're going to cross another boundary in terms of how we can update our whole financial system and based on this infrastructure. And it all connects to other infrastructures like open finance and the central bank here in Brazil. They got their tagline, we want to tokenize the economy. So it's something that's coming from the regulator. But when we see that, like a regulator saying that, it completely changed the thing. And they're really pointing the way for other players to do that, both banks and fintech.
So is the central bank pushing the agenda? Because you said the banks and the fintechs, is it pushing everybody forward at the same pace? And so are the incumbents benefiting and the startups as well? Or is there a certain bias towards disruption?
We have the tech already. When you look at the crypto world, for example, everything that's going on there. Regulators around the world try to emulate all those properties that we see in this field. There are people that are not happy with CBDCs, but it's an unstoppable movement. It's going sooner or later to integrate with the reality of the crypto world that's already there. There are players already doing stuff, stable coins as well. The vision of the regulator here is trying to integrate both worlds, is trying to make these conversions happen. We are currently in the phase of a pilot There are banks and fintechs involved in the pilots. It's going to be fully released to the population by the end of this year or early next year. So we're already going to see players that are going to the like incumbent players in this game. It's a major push for the incumbents to go there. And the players that are already there, there's another part of the puzzle, which one is the central bank creating CBDC. The other one is that we have a regulatory process right now. The virtual asset service providers, we just had a public consultation about that. So the general rules and guidelines for the players that are going to be in this field, there are some rumors that perhaps the banks that are already licensed institutions, it's going to be easier for them to acquire additional license. But for new players, they're going to have a specific license for that. Because when you look at the banks, they have many of the QIC and other processes in place already. So they already have a massive burden in terms of a regulatory burden. And on the fintech side, we're going to see everyone that wants to be in this field as a service provider in the digital asset world applying for their license. We just had the consultation, so we don't know exactly how it's going to be. So the regulatory piece is there. The infrastructure piece is there. Both banks and fintechs are joining, and the regulator is orchestrating the whole thing. I think it's a very harmonic process that they are conducting, to be honest. And I don't see complaints from the new players and even from the incumbents. I think that both know, they both know we are on the same page trying to move forward on a path of evolution of the financial system.
Now, Pix, let's start there, because it was one of the earliest ventures. It's been a huge success, and you said, like in India, it had a huge impact on creating the whole ecosystem, creating financial inclusion. Are there new products on Pix as well that have been deployed over the last 2 years?
Yeah, there are lots of security features that they've been implementing. There are other features that they are in the roadmap of Pix. For example, a kind of embedded buy now, pay later feature into it. You can basically, when you buy something, pretty soon we're going to have that. Some of the banks are emulating this type of thing, but it's not a native one. But we're going to have a native one in which you can basically pay in installments using Pix. So it automatically connect to it, you're going to use a credit line for an institution that provides. So it's going to be like in the point of sale. So it's incredible. And then I see the central bank trying to create this whole infrastructure to provide to the Brazilians alternatives, even to the credit card. So here in Brazil, credit paying with installments with credit card is a pretty common thing. It happens for decades here in the country. But now when we see this feature also in Pix, and everyone use Pix here, it's a very popular type of payment. So we're going to see people that in other cases wouldn't have access to regular credit cards with a credit line, but they're going to have that opportunity using this feature of Pix. So there's another thing in the roadmap, which is offline Pix. You can pay offline and things like that. Through NFC, right now we use a key attached to your email, your phone, or even QR code. But now we're going to have also NFC. So there's a very comprehensive roadmap for Pix to advance. And the cool stuff is, and many people, I get this question a lot, is, okay, but you already have a very instant payment system in place. It's complementary. And we see also in India, they are doing something around the digital rupee. Here in Brazil, it's just like that. We have it solved in the payment side, but we can develop and create the whole new products on top of the programmability feature of a CBDC, which is going to be the Rex here. So from things like deliver versus payment, in a situation in which you automatically exchange, for example, the ownership of an apartment without need to go to any other place to make this transfer, but because the transfer is going to happen at the same time, the settlement is happening at the same time of the transfer, from basically having the opportunity to buy and sell stocks in a tokenized version of it, because the whole infrastructure is enabling tokenization of other products and service. And eventually we're gonna have the opportunity to make payments using Drex as well, But Drex complements Peak right now, but in the future, maybe Drex can even be a more evolved infrastructure, and we use that more than Peak. It's going to come to complement the whole stuff. I'm very optimistic with the path that we are going.
So staying with the comparison, the one criticism, at least from the industry on UPI in India, is that it's free of charge. There's not your usual margin in there. How does this work on the PIC side?
Yeah, here is also the same thing, but there's a distinction here, okay? Because when you look at the central bank, when they created this agenda for PICs, it based on two things: financial inclusion on top of that, and modernization of the whole financial system. We got many aspects to consider on that. The first one is the PICs created, the Central Bank of Brazil created the PICs rails, and the central bank maintains it. And the other, and the financial institutions are plugged into that. So it's for that, all that to really function, the central bank mandated financial institutions, either banks or fintechs that offer checking accounts, to and they have more than 500,000 clients, they are mandated to connect to the PICs infrastructure. So with that, we have this network effect, because most of the transactions happen in the big financial institutions level. But once the big ones are connected, all the other ones connected, and now if you are a fintech company offering checking accounts, you got to be connected to PIX directly or indirectly through third parties. It needed to be free of charge. So the transferring between individuals is free of charge. But they created a thing that if you are a financial institution and you are offering that to a business, so PIX for SMEs and other companies, you can charge it. And what's happened here in Brazil is that many of the fintechs opted not to charge. So they are seeing this opportunity to grow in market share by not charging for PIX for companies. And other banks, and some banks have a package, a minimum of 10 PIX transactions, you're free of charge. After that, you're going to pay. Because many of them have their own acquiring business. So it's cannibalizing and competing with credit cards, with the POS mini and the POS machines that they offer. So I think it was a win for PIX to have this kind of impact, being free of charge in an emerging country like Brazil. It's fundamental. So that was a cool thing. On the flip side, I see one of the problems of PIX somehow would be that it's fully maintained by the central bank. So the problem is, however, we have a strike. We just had a strike. The service can be impacted. But the central bank offered the opportunity for other players to create something around that. They didn't create. Okay, let's create it. And I firmly believe that was true and was okay for Brazil. Many other countries around the world, the central bank don't see themselves as a player. They don't have the capacity or the people to do that by themselves. So it's different from what we see in India, because we have a consortium and it's like a partly public-owned and industry-owned. It's different. But I believe that it's an important thing so that we can see inclusion in countries like Brazil and India.
What does it mean for your daily life? Is PIX what you use every day when you go to the supermarket?
Yeah, PIX is ubiquitous in many places. From we are in the beach and in other situations, we need to carry cash, because even though the POSs have been becoming increasingly popular with the population, like taxi drivers using mini POS and stuff like that, it wasn't that accessible for if you are like a street merchant. Some street merchants wouldn't have that. So they accept PIX because it's pretty easy for them to do. And that's the situation. We see people using that all the time. I still use credit card as well, because we can defer the payment. So it's a different way of managing your finance. But it's very cool to have an alternative from big payments from company to anything you pay online or you pay in the point of sale. PIX is the thing. And it's already the dominant payment system used by Brazilians. And I think that they did it by including a very large portion of the population that didn't have the chance to access other types of products, even though they are also becoming increasingly popular, like credit card and stuff. But Pix was helped unlock this possibility for the population in general.
Has it moved substantially the cashless payment rate? So is that noticeable?
Definitely. I can remember the exact numbers, but I can share that afterwards. But one thing is for sure, it got market share from debit cards. It got market share from credit cards as well. It is specifically, it got a lot of market share of cash. So it really is impacting the way we use cash here. I don't touch cash for a long time. There are statistics showing that it impacts directly, especially because there's a lot of costs involved with cash, from moving that around to other security measures you need to have. So more and more companies are having this idea that it's important to transition. Even with the implementation of Pix, there was also another feature that was created by the central bank, was the ability for you to withdraw cash using Pix. For example, if you are a merchant, you can exchange cash that you have in your counter. And if someone picks you, you deliver cash to this person. So basically, many merchants in Brazil are type of ATM. It's not automatically, but it's just it's counterintuitive, but it's cool because when you have the possibility of having cash, because most people accept Pix, but you can have some specific situations that people only take cash. So basically, you're going to carry less cash with you, because when you need it, if you need it, you're going to do that using this feature of Pix and get it from the merchant. So it's also incredible stuff that, okay, not that cash is something that it's going to become part of the history and something that people are going to lose less and less, that we won't give it any support anymore. The central bank also thought about giving support to it in a way that it's a very clever way of doing that, bridging this gap and this transition from a cash-based economy and a cashless economy as we are going through right now.
I love that use case. And I think it's when you look at these saying of software rules the world, like the ATM hardware is one item where software really hasn't taken over. And for all the reasons that you mentioned there, every shop should be an ATM or provide the service. In Japan, we've got too many bank branches, we've got too many ATMs, and they're all like in prime locations, right? You clearly put your ATM into a railway station or so. That's prime real estate. You could take them out and rent it out to a shop, actually make good money.
Yeah. So I think that there are lots of situations, and we got to be prepared for this change. For example, another thing I think it's worth mentioning is, for the Brazilian, Pix is great. But if you are a foreigner, in most of the cases, you won't have a Brazilian account. So you won't get the benefits of Pix. I see some startups trying to offer a Pix experience for travelers. But for that situation, you're going to still need cash. And if your ATMs are still something that we need. But not only that, I think that credit cards are here because they build up a very good network, a global network for people to buy stuff all over the globe. So for travelers, it's still a very important thing. Even Brazil, I use it a lot, credit cards. It helped bridging the gap of financial inclusion, access, but it needs to coexist with other types of payments because we got different realities within the country and also when we are interacting with players around the globe. I also believe that with the CBDC phenomenon and that really happening all over the world, we're going to have another option, which is that we already have cryptocurrency for when you're traveling, but we're also going to have, like, in the next decade, the opportunity to pay using CBDCs and our stable coins. The merchants, they are going to be prepared to take it. So it's going to be another point of this evolutionary process.
What we see in Southeast Asia, for example, between Singapore and Thailand, essentially the connectivity between this fast payment rail. So you can pay from a Singapore bank account into a Thai bank account through that connector. Is the infrastructure in the rest of Latin America also pushing in that direction so that you can play that connectivity game as well?
Yeah, we are in the early days of that. There's an initiative by the Central Bank of Brazil trying to make Pix international. But at the same time, we have the Drex infrastructure, which is CBDC, and other countries are doing. We don't know which one is going to connect first. I think perhaps the case of the CBDC, they're going to be faster in the connection because other countries are doing as well. And the Pix infrastructure is a very specific one. But one thing the Central Bank of Brazil did, which is they open sourced Pix. So if you are a foreign country from Africa, from anywhere in the world, you can basically approach the central bank and they are going to, okay, that's the project. You can use that. It was to create it, it was around $4 million. So it was extremely cheap given the size of the impact. So that's the whole project. But anyways, other countries can benefit from that. We have the playbook already established. There are some regulators that think, for example, small countries like Uruguay, that 4 million people in terms of population, for them, they are short on people. So it won't justify the creation of infrastructure by the central bank in terms of costs. It won't be effective. And there are other countries like Chile. They don't think that it's role of the regulator to create and maintain a system. They are using the guidelines so that the market can construct something around that. So even though we have open source the Pix as an open source technology, we have countries that differ in terms of how they can implement that. I know that there are some conversations with regulators of Colombia, Canada, and some countries in Africa. And it's good. It's Brazil having the chance to export their own infrastructure. I know that India do the same thing with through NC. I forgot the name of the company, the national...
NCPI were also, right?
NCPI, I think I had some conversations with them as well because it's in their best interest as well, trying to expand this infrastructure. So I think it's cool. But at the same time, we have the CBDC tech movement can really surpass all these discussions in a local level. It won't go away, of course, the Pix and the payment infrastructure in India. But there is something new in this phenomenon of CBDCs connected with stable coins as well for different purposes, connected with DeFi. I think that we are seeing it's really getting in a momentum all over the globe. That's something that I wrote in my latest book, basically how all those things are coming together and converging. So it's a new era.
How do you see the role of foreign denominated stable coins in the Brazilian market, or what's the central bank position on that? Is it allowed, or what are the regulations?
It is allowed. It's heavily used. For example, we have other Brazilian stable coins that people use a lot. There's one called BRZ. But the thing is, with the latest regulatory movement from the public consultation, I think we're going to have lots of other ones. The good thing is that the regulators and the government is interested in solving this. It's not trying to prevent it. It's trying to, okay, how do we integrate that? So it's not prohibited. But I believe that when we have Drex, the stable coins are going to be backed by Drex, denominated in Brazilian reais. That's the movement. And one thing is, when we see this type of transition in a national level, mandated and conducted by the regulator, it's just that Drex is our native infrastructure. It's going to be our native programmable blockchain-based infrastructure. So all the rest of the ecosystem that already exists need to be plugged into that. But not only that, it's going to see how those different pieces are going to connect. In all the events, the president of the central bank says that we want to integrate that with DeFi. It can change a lot of things in terms of how the market functions. So we got to be aware that things are going to change. A few years back, the president of central bank said, I don't know how it's going to be exchanges of money, of values are going to happen in 3 years from now. But one thing is for sure, we need to get prepared for that. We cannot pretend it doesn't exist. We need to look at it and see how we can fit and accommodate the infrastructure in this new place. And what they are trying to do is migrating that, evolving that, and doing it in a way that it's got an order on that, that got stages, that got a pilot phase that involves the main players, the incumbents and fintechs, as and which is hot, and it's a huge market, but regulators are kind of lost. Some of the political people don't know for sure if CBDC, Trump said that he'll never approve CBDCs and things. So I think that people sometimes get some narratives around that. Some of them, like the control of the population using CBDCs and all this stuff. But I also read some reports like the one that Citi released last year, which is Money, Tokens, and Games, which says that CBDCs can be like a Trojan horse for this whole crypto stuff, because it's just like you're creating and embedding natively this blockchain capability. So all the rest of the market will create integrations and make that operate like together. And I see this way. Someone can get a loan based on the Drex environment, but they also can compare to this other offering in DeFi, and it's easily integrated into my account, into my daily finance. So you're going to have an alternative way, and also the regulated way, which is a blockchain basic. And that's, I think that's alternative for the people. And even for them to discover that there is this whole crypto world that exists, and now it's integrated with my traditional finance because the central bank created this evolution of the infrastructure, the ecosystem. See what's coming next.
Once you let it, yeah, let it go. So I think that's where the worry comes from. There's the money side, and then we have stock exchanges and we've got public companies. Yeah. But then the other big theme is RWA, tokenization of real world assets. So are the exchanges also together with the, I don't know, securities regulator and the central bank?
Definitely. The foundation level of that is having our currency denominated into this blockchain infrastructure. Once we have that and the settlement properties are embedded into the currency, so it's the perfect sandbox for the creation of cool stuff. The stock exchange in Brazil is already doing researches around that. So I think it comes from this native level of how our currency, which is the basic stuff, gets into this transition through this new technology. And from that on, there are conversations with the stock exchange trying to do that. Lots of players in the tokenization market that are already tokenizing things based on the infrastructure that they already have in the different blockchains that are out there. But now they are going to start moving. So it starts here, but it can lead to many things that already exist. When you see that into the traditional infrastructure, it's a game changer. What I see for the next years is Brazil getting this position as a market, which is a big economy. They got the regulatory aspects already in place. The infrastructure thing is already in place as well. It's transforming. So it can attract lots of entrepreneurs from different parts of the world. I try to establish my business in Singapore, which is a very high tech. They push the edges and the boundaries for everything they do, but it's a tiny market. I can develop and use it as a lab, but it's hard to understand how the traction I'm creating there is going to get in the other places. But in Brazil, it's going to be okay. I'm going there as an entrepreneur. I create my company. I develop my tech on top of everything that they already have in terms of regulation and infrastructure. And I can target a big market that still got lots of people that need inclusion. There are so many other products, financial products, that people can start using after this transformation is in place. Nubank, one of the biggest fintechs in the world, was made here exploiting this problem, I would say, attacking inequality and quickly expanding into LATAM. So I see here as a hotspot for entrepreneurs to come, implement their business, and tap an address of large market.
Totally. And Nubank is a fantastic story. And I think last time we spoke, they started, it was early days for Mexico and Colombia, right? And so much more penetration than now as well.
And they are going full power into those different countries like Mexico and Colombia. Nubank was founded in 2013. And from that on, I don't see any player in Mexico that is as robust as Nubank in terms of solution that they offer. Looking at the neobanks, after all this time, they are still a very competitive player. And if they enter those markets, they are not finding fierce competition. But the opposite is not the situation, because for neobanks trying to enter Brazilian market, N26 just left Brazil.
Yeah.
They were in beta, and they just left Brazil because trying to fight giants like Nubank and even the incumbents that made the transition and have robust apps, and it's hard. But the other way around is not. It's like for Nubank to expand into this market, the neobank solutions in those countries aren't that robust. So major opportunity. And I see other opportunities in the neobanking market. It's hard to tap into the Brazilian market. But in all the other things around the infrastructure, from tokenization, and I see lots of companies coming here, Paxos and many other, Fireblocks, all those players are coming to Brazil because they know of the size of the opportunity. They also can take the lessons from a country that when things are operational and regulated and try to bring that to different countries. I won't mention the company, but he works in the commercial department of a large tech company. And the thing that happened is every time there was a new technology, this tech company was one of the first to offer a version of this tech in Brazil because they have research centers all over the world. But the thing happened is now the clients are asking, okay, what about Drex? And they said, we got to develop that because we don't have anything like this in other countries. So they're going to perhaps use Brazil as a research center to do the opposite. In other countries, when they're mature enough to have the discussions around the CBDCs, okay, we have something, but based in many of the lessons learned in Brazil, by the time we research it, stuff there. It's a shift in paradigm in terms of a country that used to import technology, and now we are in a position to export, especially in the public infrastructure side of it. So that's a cool shift to witness.
Yeah, it's a good position to be in. So you had a very good exit with Pismo as well, right? To
VC. Yeah, exactly.
Like a unicorn level exit, $1 billion. So I'd spoken to those people. Also a very good success story, right? Where who would have had a core banking platform from Brazil on the radar screen?
So that's cool. And the thing is, most people don't know it because in the 80s and early 90s in Brazil, we have one of the biggest inflation in the world. So we were one of the top countries in this infamous ranking of the ones that got a big inflation, just like we see Argentina right now. And in that point, we have to evolve our system because we need to try to transact as fast as possible because we have inflation. So we evolved a lot in these early days. And then we have the Brazilian real, which was transformational in terms of trying to solve this inflationary problem. But the thing is, we have previous to PIX, something called TED, which is basically a real-time transaction. It's not 24/7. It happened from the time that the banks are open, like from 9 to 5. But then now we have the PIX and all of that. So during this time, all the players that operate in the financial field have lots of lessons learned. So they have the chance to create robust solutions on top of the challenges that we have and to face it here daily. And they change it. So Pismo is one of these companies. They have accumulated expertise, translated to the banking as a service field, translated that to the software that they created that is cloud-based, that is scalable, that. And now it's been used all over the world. Even before the acquisition by Visa, they already sold some solutions for Citi in the world. That's cool to see many other companies are going to the global market. There's another one called Matera in Brazil. They were very involved in the early days of PIX, and now they are trying to do something around FedNow in the US. They're establishing solutions based on the FedNow in the US. Many other old school companies in Brazil that are tech companies in the banking world are going to bring their lesson learned to other countries. So I think it's going to be cool to see this evolution companies as well.
also a situation with stability versus instability, inflation, non-inflation. Your general perspective when you compare the Brazilian market against Argentina at this point?
Yeah, I think Argentina is going through a tough time right now. Javier Milei, the president they just elected, is trying to do a turnaround in the country. If it's going to work or not, we're going to see, but it's going to be a bitter remedy because it's not easy to change the point that they got right now. But the cool stuff is that as Latin Americans now, they can thrive facing the adversities. One of the biggest techs in the world is Mercado Libre, based in Argentina. And also, I saw that there is a solution, an instance transferring solution that Mercado Libre created that was even copied by the banks because the user experience was so good. So they created a system that reminds of Pix, which people can use a alias so that you can transfer money easily within the network of Mercado Libre. It's just like what we have in China with Alipay. So they managed to do that here. There are lots of things to address in this situation in Argentina. The crypto ecosystem is growing a lot due to necessity. There is a strong community on crypto developing solutions. Javier Milei is pro-crypto. Instead of pushing that or avoiding that as the previous government tried to do with crypto, I think he's going to embrace that as a piece of the solution instead of a part of the problem. That's what I perceive from that. But instability, there is going to be 4 difficult years for them. But there are some indicatives that they are trying to do their best and trying to incorporate some of things instead of pushing that away, just like crypto, as I mentioned.
Let me ask you a completely different question. We've obviously got the Apple glasses out over the last week, right? The first pictures that people post from the environment that they get is pretty cool. I still think the version 1 is something to wait out unless you have money to burn. But how do you think these XR, AR technologies will change how we access finance in the future?
Yeah, I think that's another wave of transformation as well. And I think people find it strange as well when I heard that Sergey Brin also had this epiphany when he created the Google glasses that didn't work out, but was that he saw in the streets people like this, looking at the screen of their cell phones and walking. But I think that there's sometimes that it's all innovation is all about timing. So it wasn't the right timing. We have major improvements to do in terms of how light it is, and it's still like a space stuff, but it's the future. There's a company, I think no one heard anymore about this company. They intend to revolutionize the whole stuff. And they created you can search for Magic Leap 2, I think that their second device, which is pretty cool. It's just like this size here. I think someone's going to buy their IP and do something that is cooler than using the thing that Apple offers. But the thing is, they thought it was expensive. It was around when they sold their headsets, was around $2,500, and they thought it was expensive. And it was targeted to corporations, not to individuals, basically. So when HoloLens was almost the same thing with Microsoft, yeah. It was like this big, but it's like a huge, and they thought, okay, no one is going to buy that because it's going to be so expensive. Let's sell it to the corporations. But then Apple did their magic trick again, just like they did with the iPhone, because we saw a smartphone existed long before. We have Blackberries, even we have Simon from IBM from 94. Simon was like way ahead of its time when there's no infrastructure available for data and all of that, 4, 3, 5G. Apple did that with smartphone. They're doing it again with the glasses. And it's going to push the whole ecosystem to create stuff. Meta is going to do something not so focused in gaming, just like what they're doing right now, and going to focus more on the computing. Magic Leap is going to, I think, going to be acquired. In 5 years, we're going to see something that's easier to use. And it's going to translate into solutions that are going to blend it with AI that we have. We're going to see basically a Jarvis for your day-to-day stuff. So you're going to have a Jarvis embedded into your glasses. And every time you look at something, you ask it. With generative AI, we're going to have the answers.
based on data in the web, the environment, and your own data. I think it's going to unlock lots of the possibility, and there's no turning back from it. It's just like there is a book, Crossing the Chasm, which basically shows that there's some factors that can make the perfect storm happen so that we can cross the chasm of adoption. Because most of the times it's a geek stuff, just like many of the innovations saw, but to cross it, just the iPhone made for the smartphone industry, Apple is very good in marketing our stuff. AI is here, so it's a good factor for those blended AI with an AR mix of solutions. So we are in the exact point in which we are prepared to see this another leap in terms of UX in devices, like transitioning from smartphone from spatial computing. And of course, you're gonna see lots of impactful solutions. I'm writing about assisted finance. We've been using calculators to do calculations. You don't do calculations by your own. Right now, people are writing with the assistant of ChatGPT and stuff. And soon we're going to have our finances assisted by Jarvis, Siri, an evolved version of Siri. So we're going to have this helping us. So we're going to ask them, just like Jarvis and the Iron Man. It's going to be a very cool word. The cinema, they predict stuff. They did that with 2001. Space artists, all the stuff, and then we see that in the real world. So it's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? I think we always forget about that because all the headlines you read are just negative. There's not a headline that sells. So
let's look at the bright side of all those innovations. Yeah. I remember a lot of criticism that smartphone received, you know, for years, and we cannot. It's something that it's essential in our daily lives. Soon we're going to think of the same about spatial computing devices anyway.
I came to Japan in 97 for the first time, and an international phone call back home to Europe would cost me $3 a minute. It's been like this for 10 years or so. Fantastic. To a final question I need to ask you, it's who's going to win the 26 World Cup?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I hope it will be Brazil, but I'm not very excited with the previous performance of Brazil in soccer, to be honest. I'm even betting more on Argentina instead. I'm not delusional with the expectations. I think that France, perhaps, they have a very good history. Brazil got to change a lot of things to be competitive in the next World Cup. But let's see. It's going to be here in the Americas anyways. I enjoy the game. I like to see the football. The finals of the previous one with Argentina and France was just one of the best matches I saw in my life. So I prefer to see one of the best of my life, even if it's Brazil or not.
So that's a good opportunity to export picks, right? And have all the Brazilians who travel to the US, yeah. Canada, Mexico, pay with picks through PayPal or whatever else.
Yeah, let's see that. Amazing. See.
Enough time to implement that. You guys are running so fast. It's amazing.
Let's rush to get it done.
This was really enjoyable. Great to catch up. And it's unbelievable. It was 2 years already. So hopefully next time isn't that far out. And if you're creating an entity in Singapore, then we might see you in the region here at some point too.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I'm just foreseeing some opportunities to go to Asia again. I used to go to Asia once a year in pre-pandemic times. I haven't been there. It's been a while. So almost four years. So let's try to get back this year.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you very much, Bruno. As always, super insightful and cheerful and optimistic. That's great. It's always fantastic to talk to you. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hope to see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, see you. Take care, wherever you are.
Bye-bye.